Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast. I am Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler. Man, we've got a lot to cover tonight, especially for an episode where we're not even talking about a game.
No games.
No games.
But can I say something, Brian? If you watch Sunday night, y'all saw Curtis as a nervous wreck. And if you're asking me on social media, potentially DM and stuff this week, y'all know I was a nervous wreck because my fear was we're not going to get a decent fucking coach. Oh, God, we're not going to get a good coach. Jesus, we're not going to get a good coach. Let me have some whiskey here. All right. I'm nerve-wracking. Brian's more cool and relaxed. Kind of. He shot me a few texts where a little worry came over.
Yeah. Not worried, but definitely getting a little anxious. And especially as we got into late Monday night, we started to see a couple other names pop off. And we're like, all right, who we getting? And it turned out we got a dark horse.
One of our dark horses. I don't think you pulled the clip, Brian, but if you go back to Sunday during that episode, Brent Pry was a dark horse. Brian, I was like, he's a dark horse. I don't know if we'll talk to him. You said point blank, he will get a phone call. And he clearly got a phone call. He was one of the first three phone calls Whit Babcock made. And that would be Brent Pry, your new Hokie head coach. And can I say why we kind of put him at the dark horse level?
Go for it.
If you recall, when we were going through it, we had mentioned Brent Pry a couple times, just as behind the scenes, me and Brian talking. And I said, you know, it's a name, good defensive coordinator, coached a long time, some experience in Blacksburg. But when James Franklin locked in that 10-year deal, instead of being in our list, we moved him out because he'd been with Franklin so long. I mean, right at 10 years, he was his right-hand man. It was like, maybe they call him, but is he one of these DCs for life? And he's making over $1 million. He's got, you know, an elite defensive unit. I mean, there are a couple games this year. I mean, the Ohio State game this year and the Michigan game against those offenses, that defense kept them in those games.
And, I mean, just a linebacker factory.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to hit all that tonight. So it was this underlying reason. It's like he's just not going to come. And then lo and behold, mid-morning on Tuesday, Pete Thamel first reported. And Pete's pretty good. But it was about 30 minutes later, I think, all of Hokie Nation was like, when David Teal put out the tweet,
yeah,
we got our guy.
Once you saw Teal, you're like, all right, somebody on the inside has confirmed it. Because Teal wasn't just going to repeat a report from Thamel. Teal was going to confirm shit himself before he put it out there. And here we are. We wanted to wait and do this episode until after we saw the press conference, introduction, all that stuff that was going on today. And I'm thankful for that because I feel like we get to kind of talk about some fun stuff, too, on top of just here's the hire, here's why we like it, and here's who we hope he brings along with him. We get to have a little bit more to talk about on that, so I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that we played a little bit of a waiting game there, pushed it back a day. And hopefully you guys enjoy what we're about to bring your way.
Absolutely. All right, well, Brian, just I'm sure everybody's heard it, but let's get a quick run of his background. Obviously, born in Altoona, Pennsylvania, but spent kind of his formative years at Lexington. His dad was a football coach, smaller schools and high schools around basically West Virginia, Virginia, in the greater Mid-Atlantic area. So played football at Lexington High School. And I'm going to start in 1998 because the last piece everybody knows. 98, he has a run at Western Carolina. 2002-2006, he was at ULL with a name, if you are a Hokie fan of our generation, you know, Ricky Bussell, the offensive coordinator for the 99 team, offensive coordinator throughout the 90s with some of those big teams. He was the DC for Ricky down there. They had some success, and probably two names that pop out immediately. He coached Peanut Tillman if you watch the NFL in the 2000s, was a ball hawk and Ike Taylor. So already coaching at a defensive coordinator level, NFL type players.
Yep.
And, you know, Bussell gets let go in 06 and he goes over to Memphis. Is that a red flag for anybody? He coached at Memphis for 3 years.
It's not when you see who he coached.
Oh, yeah. Now, Memphis, he coached the D-line, and he coached Ontario Poe, who was like a low-level two-star. And that kid, when the first round, played quite a few years. That big – one of the most unreal talented guys to be 350.
The size-to-athleticism ratio that Dontari Poe brought to the table was ridiculous.
Early Tim Settle. And yeah. Early Tim Settle.
Yep.
So he stays there just 3 years, goes over to Georgia Southern where he was defensive coordinator and safeties coach. So right there it kind of tells you linebackers, safeties, D-line. Only thing he hadn't coached really is the corners. But then in 2011, essentially this is his big break. He's hired by James Franklin at Vandy. And basically, linebacker, defensive coordinator, associate head coach, recruited the likes of Oren Burks, who's currently with the Green Bay Packers, and a very, very good linebacker in Zach Cunningham. Never coached those guys, but recruited them to Vandy. And then, obviously, the Penn State follows Franklin in 2014. Associate head coach, co-defensive coordinator, there and Vandy with Bob Shoup. Then he takes over when Shoup leaves, coaches linebackers. And Brian, give us the laundry list of players he coached there and recruited.
Yeah, so we've got Micah Parsons is the big one. He's five-star, crushing it for the Cowboys. I mean, it's just – there's not really a whole lot you can say that people don't already know about Micah Parsons. You got Shaka Toney, Yetur Gross-Mato, Mike Hull. Yeah. Fredericksburg.
Product.
Mike Hull, Big Ten linebacker of the year, guys. He also recruited that aren't in the league yet. Brandon Smith, five-star linebacker out of Louisa. He's been having a good season there for the, Nittany Lions, and
was on
also
the watch list.
I mean, yeah. And then obviously Devin Ford, the four-star running back out of Stafford.
He's the guy that stole him. He's the guy.
So, I mean, yeah, that's a list of nothing but like 4 and 5 star guys that he's been able to pull, a handful of them coming out of Virginia.
Well, just think about the list really for the last 20 years. Consistently, guys he's coached on his defense have made it to the league, with the exception of the stop at Georgia Southern in 2010. Every stop, at least one or multiple players making it to the league. Yep. That is a huge selling point. And it's almost this thing is, I can do it at any level. You have a feeling Tillman and Ike Taylor were not five-star guys. They were ULL. Shows you some developmental, but also shows you he can recruit.
Well, he can recruit, he can identify talent, and he can develop. So it's kind of the trifecta, right?
And it's what the Hokies need. We need the trifecta. We're never going to pull all the 5 stars, so we've got to be able to develop. Now, Brian.
We need to identify the guys. We need to be able to pull enough of those 4 or 5 star to keep us in that top 25, top 20 recruiting ranking. But we also need to be able to identify guys that other schools aren't, that probably are underranked in their star ranking. And once we get those guys on campus, we got to be able to develop them and get them to reach their maximum potential.
Absolutely. Now, obviously we did skip. And obviously the biggest point was he was at Virginia Tech as a grad assistant under Bud, under Frank from 1995 to 1998. Of our ilk, you know what those years were. 93 and 94 were the emergence, 95 and 96, especially 95 and 96, were the bringing to the national stage. The Sugar Bowl and the Orange Bowl, playing Texas and beating Texas, and playing Nebraska in the Orange Bowl. And it's this feeling, and I mentioned to a couple people today, if you watched it, we'll talk about the pressure in general later. There's some orange and maroon blood in him. You feel it. You feel it. He talked about coming to camp at Tech when Frank was a coach when he was in high school. So this isn't like your direct perfect. This is the hokey hokey. This is like the second cousin, right?
Yep. And this is, and just hearing him speak, I mean, this was a stop that mattered a lot for him for years.
Yeah.
And well, I think that's the biggest thing. And having someone that is familiar with what it takes to win in Blacksburg, what Blacksburg is all about, what Virginia Tech football is all about, sometimes you have to live it to know it.
Yes, sir.
And here's an example of someone that did live it. So I think that's going to be big for us. And he's had stops at, obviously, Penn State being a bigger time program than Virginia Tech. He's seen what it takes to compete at that type of level.
Yep.
In the modern age of college football, essentially since kind of the big flip that happened kind of towards the end of the 2000s, where some of the recruiting and everything else really went into overdrive there, right? So he knows how to win in that environment, and that's something that we really haven't had at the head coach position, because, you know, towards the end of Frank's career, he hadn't figured it out. He hadn't been able to adapt towards the end there. Fuente never really got it fully.
Yep.
And the other aspects that were negatives in his role there, it wasn't a good fit. Yep. We finally got someone that has seen the inside of that type of program and knows what it takes to win. So, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, obviously the big thing is going to be what does the staff fill out like? Yep. But we did get some big news today on that front. So this kind of came out just before the presser. Compensation for coach and assistant salary.
Oh, yeah.
And that's big, because I didn't see it going this high. I didn't think we were going to look for it getting this high, because he's getting $4 million at the gate, 3.5 supplemental, and then the 500K, state salary.
Yeah.
So he's getting $4 million at the gate, but Witt was true to his word. $2 million bump in assistant salary pool. Another 2.75 allocated for recruiting assistants. Those are a single bucket. So if you need to move one to the other, little more in one, little more in the other, you're essentially looking at almost $8 million combined between those two buckets to bring in quality on-field coaches, 10 on-field coaches, and a very solid recruiting staff.
Yep, it is. It's going to be second behind Clemson as of this year. And it's one of those things that we did some math with some folks today. You can play both coordinators $1 million, and the average starting salary for your assistant coaches is $400,000. It's significantly lower than that right now, and everybody knows that. So dipping into that bucket is huge. I mean, it's one of those things, especially the way we'd set it up to be able to shift it. You know, you get your recruiting staff in place and you still have an excess of $300,000, and, you know, somebody has a great year, here's a $100,000 bonus. Or this guy wants $650, not $550. Okay, well, we're going to move this over here to here. I like them in the same bucket. They need to stay in the same bucket, because I think the recruiting department's going to be that turnover. You're going to have some stable guys. But to me, it's going to be people who want to get their foot in the door. You know, guy comes in, he's here 2 years, he's making $60,000 a year, he goes up to 75, but he leaves for a bigger position. That's going to probably fluctuate every few years to where it's going to go a little higher than a little lower, where you can move the money back and forth. So I think Witt did that perfectly, and he was true to his word. It was going up. It is a hell of a lot more money. And
yeah, we went from middle of the pack in the ACC to number two
in
one move. So, I mean, that's big. That shows a firm commitment to football, which we've been begging for years.
What have you been saying? The tide, the water.
Put the money in your cash cow, and your cash cow will make you more money for everybody.
Exactly. And we're doing it. It's great to see. Now, Brian, some other things that have came down the past few days since the Brent Pry announcement, you've got four guys in the recruiting class pretty much already saying that they are locked in. Harrison St. Germain from up in Nova, Malachi Madison down here in the RVA, Bryce Duke up in Nova, the running back, and to me, probably the biggest, because you feel like he is a bell cow leader of recruiting for the guys committed, Rashad Purnell out of Highland Springs, even bigger where he is. I think having those guys confirm, I looked somebody, I can't remember who it was, one of the guys, I think might have been Lamar Law, someone liked the tweet of the hire. I know over the next few days they're going to be having conversations with the coaches, but to have four guys good, and especially Purnell already kind of back in the boat, has got to feel great.
Yeah, I mean, Purnell is definitely a big one there. Just speaking personally, having a player from a program like Highland Springs, you know, confirm what they're doing. He's been very vocal on Twitter throughout his recruitment. So that's been big as well. So that's something that I'm looking forward to getting him on campus. And he's also, he kind of fits that mold of what we're looking for in those defensive linemen. I know we got a new system that we're looking at here probably coming in, but more than likely we're looking for the same type of player. Because it's going to be a very, gap oriented, defensive line, technique. So we're looking for probably the same type of players that can hold those gaps, bigger and taller, type lineman than we are accustomed to recruiting. And some of the recruiting that we've seen in the last couple of years has denoted that.
Yeah. So kind of one of those things where luckily the direction that we've taken it, even though, you know, we there are some holes in this, there be ready for the portal. We're going to start having a portal segment every time we record.
But yeah, it's going to be some in, and we're hopefully, I mean, some out, and hopefully we get some in as well. Absolutely. I mean, we'll identify those when we talk that segment a little bit later, guys, but getting those four to, you know, express commitment. You know, we're hearing whispers that sounds like Orgy is still ready to potentially commit on the 15th and enroll early. Oh. So that's a big one as well. It's not Twitter official or social media official, but that's the word we're getting on him. Yep. And that's going to be big because more than likely we're going to have two freshman quarterbacks being the only quarterbacks on our roster unless we hit the portal.
We're definitely hitting the portal for a quarterback. I'll make a bet on that. Something else. Something else that was set up, and this was pretty much confirmed. This was set up within 30 minutes of his announcement. So basically the announcement, it was at noon on Tuesday. Within 30 minutes, there was a Zoom call set up with football alumni. That happened today. And Dwight Vick put out there almost 170 former players on this call. To have that done in less than 48 hours, that tells you that a lot of these guys respect it, and it's already been seen. You have guys like Antonio Banks, Dwight, obviously JC. You've got guys who sat here and did it, are putting that stamp on.
And by all accounts, this was something that Pry suggested. This wasn't like Witt thought it was a good idea, had it set up. This was something that Pry wanted to do, brought it up. It got set up, rolled out, and by all accounts that that have been made public at this point, absolutely crushed it with those football alumni. Between Dwight, Brendan Hill out there saying some good stuff on what he's heard. Saw some good stuff from, I think, Rock Carmichael was out there. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of folks that you know and love that you see active on social media have made it well clear that you know, they're stamping this higher at this point. Obviously, you got to see the wins come, obviously. And obviously year one is going to be interesting with all the roster management issues that we have set up for us. But, you know, year two, year three, I think if the wins come, it's going to be a home run here. And if the portal can be our friend, then, you know, we'll see what year one looks like.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, something that did not check the box for Whit, and he said it, he mentioned it today, he didn't have any head coaching experience. But the way it seems is those opportunities had been there not once, not twice, but three times. In the last 8 years, the opportunities at Georgia Southern and opportunity at ULL, that essentially would have been the Billy Napier hire. And then last year at Buffalo, he didn't take them. And then today during the presser, and this is when I unfortunately had to step off, but I kind of heard what was said. I think you were still on the call, Brian.
Yep.
Basically, I didn't want to go to this place or this place or this place or this place, but Virginia Tech, I would go there.
Yep.
And again, it's that whole, I believe he has maroon and orange in his blood. Like,
because he had a handful of programs in the entire country that he was willing to take that step out there outside of the zone that he was comfortable in and say, I want to give it a shot here. Yep. I want to see what I can do here. And it sounds like he wanted to be a head coach, but he wanted to be a head coach when it was the right fit, the right time. And we were lucky enough to be in that number. So here we are. Brent yep. Pry, the head coach. We've heard a lot of people excited, and apparently it was mentioned at a couple places, but everybody's looking forward to the spring game again.
Everybody. Please get that released as soon as possible for me and Brian so we can essentially start talking to our wives and be like, listen, we want to go.
We're locking this shit in. We're going. It's going to be a party up there.
Exactly. And it's the whole thing. He said the fans matter. I mean, music to your ears, because the fans do matter. And talked about embracing the community. And I think when he said that, I think he meant Hokie Nation in general, not just the Blacksburg. I think he's going to be unbelievable up in Blacksburg around that community. But to get a big spring game, usually spring game, if you can remember, Brian, when we went, the west stands where we were, right? I'm always north, south. They always close it. I think they might have to just fully open a stadium because I think they could get a full house for this. The excitement around it.
It's definitely more excitement than Fuente. And I think there was some excitement with Fuente, but I feel like there's a lot more excitement right now because I think we've seen how bad it can be.
Yes.
And this isn't just, so I'll say this, we're about to talk about the presser and my overall impression of the presser was this. Everybody has maroon and orange colored glasses on right now, right?
Absolutely.
We've moved on. We got a new coach. Yeah, that's great. This went beyond that. This wasn't just a guy got up there and he said the right things. This was legitimate. You feel this guy cares about what he's about to do. He cares about this community. He cares about doing the right thing to get this program where it needs to be. And that I think is where we're kind of feeling ourselves right now, right?
Yes.
It feels good to be a Hokie fan again. It doesn't feel like there's something around the corner that's going to bite our ass. At least when it comes to football right now, we feel like we're on the upswing here, and it feels that way not just because we got a new coach, but because of what he's doing, what he's saying, and how he's caring about his business. And how he's expressing his admiration for the roots of this program and what it means.
Well, yeah, 100%. And I think today, too, I was listening. You know, usually everybody wins the presser. Usually everybody has.
It's hard to lose the presser. You might not win it, but you're not going to lose it.
Everybody hits a double on the presser, even if you do it bad. To me, this was a borderline home run, especially when he got into discussing. And I know you've got this a little later, but I think it's a good time to hit it before we deep dive. The way he mentioned James Franklin and the emotion he showed about that, about him being like a brother. They've known each other for close to 30 years. How the emotion he talked about him giving the opportunity and, you know, bringing him along to Penn State. But then the emotion when he talked about Bud and Frank, or as he called Frank, coach. And it was one of those things when he said it, like he meant Frank. Like as soon as he said it, you could just get that vibe. Like he means Frank. And he got a little choked up, and you could feel the emotion from him knowing that 26 years ago he had coached at East Stroudsburg. He sent 30 letters in. Steiny was on staff, had coached him in high school, and they gave him a GA job. And you could hear the emotion and the feel of they gave him his first big opportunity. And 26 years later, they're sitting in the room as he's announced the head coach of the first big university that took a chance on him. And it was genuine. It wasn't fake. It was so genuine. And you can say all the right things, but when you have two moments like that, you know this guy's genuine, real deal.
Yeah.
Not some bullshitter.
Well, I'll tell you what the difference is, and we've seen it the last 2 weeks, is that him and JC are cut from the same cloth.
They are.
The way they are personable with and relatable with everyone they come in contact with, but the way they wear their emotions on their sleeve, you see it, you feel it when they talk. And that is resonating 100% with the fan base right now.
It is. It 100% is.
Yep. And so one of the things that Coach Pry led off with was talking about kind of his philosophy, what he's bringing as a head coach to Virginia Tech. So this is going to be a little bit less abstract than some of the things we're talking about here. But I mean, right out the gate, hire the right people and recruit the right players.
Yep. And when I hear hire the right people, I don't think that means at Virginia Tech we'll go hire the most high dollar person. You've got to find someone that's going to fit in this culture. You can't just go out and be like, well, he's a good coach. You got to find somebody that fits the culture. So when I hear him discussing hire the right people, you got to have the right mentality. You got to have the right background. And you got to me, I also think you got to have the right connections in the footprint.
Yeah. And you got to be the right person that will do the job well, but also be able to sell the culture and vision and what it is to play in Blacksburg, because it's different than other places. And the thing I like about him coming from a place like Happy Valley is that he understands. I know that's more of an established and prestigious in terms of football program than Virginia Tech has been historically, but Happy Valley is in the middle of fucking nowhere. He understands what it takes to recruit big time players to a place that isn't a major metro area, that doesn't have all the bells and whistles within a short drive.
Yeah.
He knows what it takes to recruit to that type of community.
It's absolutely true. And it's also the expectations, right? They have expectations up there like we have down here. We expect winning. We expect good football product. Now, the other piece he talked about was recruiting the right people. We've hit on this already. And it's not only at Virginia Tech, you know, like you said, Brian, earlier, you need to get a five-star every now and then. And we kind of had them periodically. But get the four stars. But then find the under-the-radar guys. Find the athlete. And bring them in and develop them. Because, and also, he said it. People recruit people that want to be here. And he kind of, and I love what he said today. There's going to be some people we go after that they're just not going to fit here. And that's okay. Right? It's okay. It's okay. Find the people that want to be here. And Brian, you know, we talked about managing and developing the roster. What's the biggest thing? And I think if you follow closely what this statement right here, say it.
recruit our footprint. He hammered that point home. Numerous times. What we're talking about is much like we've seen Mac Brown do to a point, much like we've seen some other folks do, he's going to try to put up a fence around this state, get as much of the high caliber talent in the state to stay home, yep, to play in Blacksburg. And I mean, he emphasized it from a relationship perspective. He wants players where, you know, mom, dad, uncle, grandma, they can get in the car and drive. Yeah, they can get in the car and drive and see their son play big time college football.
Yep.
And you can't do that if some of the best players are going to Alabama or some of the best players are heading down to Florida, but you can do that every damn weekend if they're going to Blacksburg.
You damn right they are. Every weekend.
And I think that's something that we can start getting some wins there.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's the type of guy that can sell that vision to those players and say, yeah, you could go to, you know, fucking Chapel Hill, but drive an extra hour to Blacksburg, stay in your home state, and let's build something big and get Virginia Tech back to where it was when they played for a national title. You ever seen UNC in the national title?
Never. Actually, you ever seen them in a big bowl?
Once? It's been a while.
One time. Compared to where from 1995 to 2011, it was about every other year. Sugar, orange, peach.
Another thing he said that I liked, and you know, they talked about it, he's like, when he walked into Lane and he saw that the last ACC championship was 2010, he's like, that's too damn long.
Yeah.
We need to get that back. And that says that he's ready to take that next step. He's not just there to get us to the coastal. He's there to hang banners.
He's here to hang banners. And I think the other thing that kind of went about his philosophy is I don't think he's going anywhere. I think the why it took so long, and like he mentioned today, only a handful of places, this is one of those places that's like home to him. It's like home to him. And something else he said about welcoming the high school coaches and train, like almost like open door, just come on down. I think having him already established at Penn State, and I said this about Charles Huff, and I'll say it about Brent. I don't think Brent's going to have too much of a problem walking in to Highland Springs or down to Oscar Smith or up, you know, like to Stafford in those counties. Yeah. And just, they know Brent. And now Brent's going to be selling something in state where, hey, you're 2.5, you're 3 hours from Blacksburg. Let's get these kids here. We know when the top people in this state come to this university, we know the greatness that can be attained. We saw it. We saw it. When he says we, he's going to be talking to the coaches, and he's the one that's got to sell that. When the best players in this state come here, and we look at our other regional footprints and a couple other players, Big things happen. Yep. Brian, do you feel like me and you could – you got your drink there. I feel like we could go to any bar in Blacksburg, sit down with this guy, and have a drink, and have an hour conversation without blinking.
Yeah. And he talked about it. He's all about building relationships, having an open door policy. And that applies, he said, to folks that come on campus, everyone in Merriman, players, and, you know, talk about welcoming the high school coaches and getting back in the high schools. Like, we haven't seen a blitz like that in a while. Uh-huh. And that's big for me because that's what we really – that's where the recruiting problem started, was not establishing those relationships with the high school coaches. And, you know, we talked about it, but with the trainers and some of those folks that run the academies down there, especially in the 757, where that's a big part of developmental football in the middle and high school level.
Yeah. And it's becoming a culture thing down there. Like, the culture's changed down there a little bit. Don't be afraid to – I think he's going to be a guy – it's probably going to adapt pretty quick to it. You know, he also talked about our history in terms of recruitment. It's another big piece. Essentially, hold on, I made a note here of what he said. Oh, man. The pride for Virginia kids, how that used to be a big thing to go to your in-state school with your state's name on it in ball. And he talked about bringing that back. And I think, you know, so many times when you have a Virginia kid at Virginia Tech do great things, it goes so much further. I mean, just a few weeks ago, a DB and Harris going in, two kids from the state, a Highland Springs and a 757 kid going in who were ungodly on the football field. And we saw it firsthand. We saw both of them play firsthand. They were crazy good. So getting that back in, and like, again, you feel like that's going to be a selling point. Like, be proudful of the state you live in. You come here and do something, you're going to build it, and your name's going to be on there. And, you know, I think bringing the alumni back in, we've already discussed it, and having that discussion, like, you know, one of the coolest things about going to the 2016 spring game was approaching former players and just talking to them. It was just so approachable. I mean, that's where we met Daryl Tapp. And since then, we got to interview him, which is just even crazier that we met him and then interviewed him in the course of a span. They come here. You come back here, you're a god.
Yep. Next level. And I think that's the big thing that we were missing in the Fuente era that we had talked about with several people. We talked about it with Dwight when he was on here with us. We talked about it with Christina. Being able to look back, but keep it moving forward, right?
Yes.
Appreciate the history, appreciate the culture, but still do it your own way. Do it the way you have to do it in this modern era, while still honoring what got you here in the first place.
And he's already seen it at a big place, right? Yep. He mentioned that today about how you have to respect what happened then. Like, as a Virginia Tech coach, you must respect what happened in the 90s. You must respect what happened since then in all those big games. But you've got to move forward. You've got to move forward. You've got to know how to change things, but still respect it.
Exactly.
And I think seeing that process happen already, I think he's probably got an idea of what he wants to do. And you feel like if he can put some of those plans into place, it's going to be really big.
Yeah. And the other thing he talked about was, you know, once you get these players on campus, the development aspect, get them to be the best version of a football player they can be while they're here. And to a bigger point, he talked about being willing to have hard conversations. And that was with players, that was with coaches, that was with looking at himself and what he's doing. And I think that level of self-reflection and reflecting on what needs to be done to get the most out of you and your players, and that's big. That's going to be big for this program, because I feel like that was one of the big things that was lacking with the Fuente regime.
Absolutely. A huge thing lacking. And I think as I've joked, I just want a coach who's going to be willing to sit down and tell another coach, we're going to have to let you go. You're not living up to expectations.
Or before that, have some hard-ass conversations where
change.
You're trying to get them on the right damn track.
Well, yeah.
That's what we need. We need somebody that was willing to have those hard conversations, because part of being a leader. Part of being, you can't just, you know, be the nice guy, be the best friend. You can't be that guy all the time.
But you can't be the hard ass all the time either.
You can't be. And he showed in this press conference, he's like, I'll push him, but I'll, at the same time, he's having a good time up there. He's laughing, he's joking, and that's something that is night and day from what we're used to in a press conference, dude.
Oh my night god!
I mean, just so natural when he was answering questions from the media folks that were asking the questions up there. He said the right things, but he tied it back to like the personal experiences he's had, brought up some Hokie history, brought up history with other folks that he's experienced over the years. Calling out JC on Bourbon Street after the Sugar Bowl.
That was like maybe the hands down one of the best moments of his. He was sitting there, and I can't remember, was it, might have been Brooke Leonard that asked him about that.
I think so.
Yeah. And he was like, well, we started 0-2, and here comes Miami, man. The Flash, they're Miami. It's the U. And I know I'm paraphrasing some of the stuff he said. They have the orange cleats, they're shiny. And that day, we played hard-nosed defense, and we ran the ball at them, and we beat them. And we won 10 straight, and we won a Sugar Bowl. And then right here, he didn't have to say anything else. But where you felt the genuine level with JC in the room. And I tell you, when me and JC and Wes Worsham, just think of Worsham Field and you wonder who that guy is, went out on Bourbon Street and you're like, basically he just told us we were super excited we won that game and we went out and we got hammered after that game on Bourbon Street. It's relatable.
Yeah. Because that's what you would fucking do in that same situation.
If you ever told us Hokies in a Sugar Bowl and you guys went and you guys had a huge win, what would happen? Well, A, I hope we have a nanny or, you know, wifeys or come, because we would go get drunk on Bourbon Street without even a doubt.
Damn right.
That makes you feel relatable. Like, you feel like if he had that win, if next year we're walking off Lane Stadium, we beat UVA, we have the Commonwealth Cup, you feel like he would be the guy that evening cracking open a bottle of bourbon and slamming it down and celebrating a win.
Yep.
Right.
And he made another joke about Bud when he was asked what type of defense he was looking to do. He's like, your defenses have been aggressive. He's like, wonder who I got that from.
It just, again, it just, he feels like so natural. And I can't wait for this next, you know, 6 months for hopefully, I hope he hits every recruit night, because he hits recruit night in Richmond with the Richmond Hokie Club. We'll be there. We will be there. Yeah. Whatever, if they have restrictions, we'll whatever.
Yep.
Whatever.
And the big takeaway for me is that just everything seems so genuine. Like,
yes,
it wasn't manufactured. It was just like, here's the answer. Here's how I feel about it. I'm gonna kid with you. I'm gonna joke with you. But I'm gonna be serious when I need to, professional when I need to, but I'm gonna cut loose when I need to. And I think that's something that we're not used to. He seems comfortable in who he is at all times. It's not just those moments where he has to open up. It's like he is who he is on air, off air, indifferent. So I think that's something that's going to be big for us, because that's kind of how Frank was, right? I mean, that's
exactly how Frank was. That's exactly how Frank was. And I tell you, the other piece, and I know everybody's seen the videos and him coming in, flying in, getting off the band there. He was taking selfies with all the guys, with numerous band members, having fun. And later in the video, he's walking down that tunnel and talked about how coming down that tunnel brought back a ton of emotion for him. And it got you swelled. Then he shows him on the field, and I think it's his mom. I don't think it's his wife and kids, because I think they were with him, but I think it was his mom. And he's got his phone up, and he's kind of showing her around, and like he gets it. I think he gets the culture of this place, and not only just the football aspect, of it. I mean, when you saw, tell me what your immediate thought was. You saw that post of him this morning with the cord. It was like the butt crack. There was no light yet outside, but when you saw that.
I mean, we've said it before, but as soon as I saw, I was like, yeah, this dude gets it. He gets what it means to be here. He gets what's important to people on this campus, and not just people that are associated with the football team. And I think that's a big part, I think, of what we missed with the Fuente era, is that Fuente was very much compartmentalized into
football.
He wasn't necessarily community member. He wasn't necessarily, outreach to everyone on campus. There wasn't that type of role for him. It was like, this is my job as a football coach. And I don't get that sense with Pry. I think Pry seems to have a great understanding of what it means to be a part of the community, full stop, not just part of the community as a football coach. And I think that's what's been missing, because that's what Frank was. Frank was the embodiment of Virginia Tech, not just I'm a football coach.
He wasn't just a football coach. He was Virginia Tech. And I think you're right with Justin Fuente. He never bought into being a part of the whole community. Like, you didn't see, or you didn't even hear stories about going to some of the downtown restaurants, even going out like in Roanoke somewhere. That's 35, 40 minutes up the road. But if you're seen in Roanoke as a Virginia Tech head coach, people know. And how do we know this? Our musical director, Jason Long, what was it, about 6 weeks ago, we messaged him, and he's like, yeah, people are not happy up here with this coach. He is going to be gone. And again, it's the different culture of this place. And you had Frank for so long, and Frank is who he is, and it was the genuine article. And, you know, Frank to this day still walks his, you know, dog or walks around campus. The freaking College Football Hall of Fame coach just walks around campus. That's crazy. And, you know, we sit here and talk about the other things about it, you know, and we talked about it earlier, but talking about Frank and Bud again, starting his journey, the choke up piece. And I know I've mentioned it a couple of times. When you get choked up like that, it truly means something to you. And when it truly means something, I think this guy will fight tooth and nail. I think he will do everything he can to make this program where it was. And that's all we can ask right now. And, you know, how about this? Guy went to high school in Lexington. Guy went to high school in Radford. They're the head coaches of the football team and the basketball team now. And he met Mike Young today, and he talked with the players. By the way, we don't have this mentioned tonight. What a fucking victory last night, because they did not play their best game. Maryland's house was rocking. We were getting some really shitty under-the-basket foul calls, but they fucking grinded.
They sacked up in the last 5 minutes and pulled that shit out.
Yes, they did. Huge win. Shout out,
Mike. That was a big win. Mike Young definitely. There was a point where he saw, all right, I see that what we normally do isn't working. Let me call a few sets here. Let's manufacture some points to get a lead, and then let the defense close it out. And that's what he did.
I know this is off topic. Even with the losses to Memphis and Xavier, you know, the offense not clicking. The defense is playing its nuts off. Defense is going to put us in every game this year. Every game. And when the nights when the offense clicks, which I think he'll eventually get to it, and the defense
Storm,
clicks,
Storm's got to play into form. He is not Storm he is not in rhythm.
Form. He's got to figure out that he's playing against a hell of a lot better competition now. And I think Mike understood that in the second half and got him distributing a little bit more. Makes sense. Wow,
he's got to distribute more, but he also has to. When the shot's there, he can't be thinking about that last miss.
No,
because towards the end of that game, he passed up two threes that he should have took.
Wide open. All right. Somehow we just went into basketball for the last couple.
Sorry, minutes. Guys. Yeah, but yeah, meeting up with Mike Young today, that was big.
Baseball team.
I never saw a lot of interaction.
Ever
between Fuente and Young. I mean, it was very minuscule. If anything, getting that relationship going right out the gate is going to be big. I mean, they're the two biggest faces of the athletic department outside of Whit Babcock. Absolutely. So,
but you got
to put them front and center, and seeing them reciprocate like that is going to be big. And the other thing, I know we talked about him tearing up with Frank and Bud, but the big thing for me is that when Fuente was announced, Frank was stepping down, Bud was staying on. They were obligated to vouch for the new guy coming in. There was absolutely no obligation to vouch for the next head coach here, but Bud and Frank are front and center.
Yes, they are.
Singing Brent Pry's praises.
says a lot. It says a hell of a lot. It says a hell of a lot too. You'd seen Tony Robey already shouting him out. The baseball team is running laps, making jokes about making sure they got all the seats prepared for the next fall. It's one of these things. It's a cultural hire. It's a cultural hire, but it's a hire of a damn good football coach. Because, again, I said it, the defenses he's yielded, whether it's co-DC or full-time or the primary defensive coordinator at Vanderbilt and Penn State, four have been top 10 in the last 8 years. The other eight, like, I think 37, I have to go back and look. I think 37 might be the lowest. If you tell me we're going to field a top 35 defense every year and every other year we're going to be in the top 10, watch the fuck out.
Sign me up.
Sign me up too. All right. I don't think this is any shock. Obviously, it was announced back last on Tuesday. JC's being retained. JC's going to be the associate head coach along with the defensive line coach. Pearson Prelude retained. Makes a lot of sense. It's another one of those connections, right? Pearson was here during his time here. And it's pretty awesome to hear that JC and Pearson are on the road trying to lock down this recruiting class. I don't think you could ask for two better guys to do that.
I'm 100% with you. The quote was, JC, what are you doing today? He's like, I'm about to hit the road recruiting. Yeah, so he's not hanging around, dicking around. He made his appearance this morning with the presser, and then he got up back on the road trying to get this class closed out. And that's big. Retaining JC, associate head coach, going to be coaching some on the defensive line, but obviously still carrying a big mantle for the recruiting to close out this year. And, you know, Pearson, player development for defense, he's still rolling with JC and getting this class finished out. And hopefully we can retain most of this class, keep it together. I know we talked a little earlier about the four that have already kind of confirmed there. We think Orgy's in the boat as well. But keeping this class together, it's probably one of the best classes that Fuente was able to put together during his tenure, and being able to maintain that and then build upon that next year with all the resources that we'll have and what seems to be a staff, at least a head coach that we know of, and a staff that's going to be geared towards recruiting our footprint. Yeah. The sky's going to be the limit with this thing, man. So I'm looking forward to it. Big shout out to JC Price and Pearson Prelo to close this thing out for us. But, you know, the big question, Curtis, that we were asking ourselves right out the gate, right, was why is Brent Pry the best fit? And for us, we kind of really identified four areas: culture, identity, vision, and passion.
And a lot of those go hand in hand, right? Actually, probably all four, but really you put that culture and the passion together. He understands the culture. He understands how passionate this culture is. You also see how passionate he is about it. I have a feeling we're going to run the ball. Even though we ran a lot during the Fuente era, I think we're going to run the ball just as much. And I think if we can hold on to that kid on the south side, Ramon Brown, I think he has that potential to be, you know, the next running back that we will talk about forever. No disrespect to Malachi Thomas, although I'd love to get him in there. Let's get an Untouchables part two.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm all for it.
If you know.
Yeah. But I mean, the identity, I mean, it goes back. Our identity has always been defense first, special teams, defense, cripple you into submission. And I think we're going to get back to that identity.
Yes.
And I think that's big. And he was talking about it even to the point where he's like, you know, we're bringing in a DC, but he will call plays once I'm comfortable with him calling plays. If that's after spring ball, that's great. If it's after year one, that's great.
Accountability. Accountability.
Yeah. He wants to make sure that defense is humming. That's first and foremost. on his mind. And that's big for us, because I think when we look at what Virginia Tech is, it is a defense and special teams first program. I mean, the offense will come, and I think the offensive coordinator hire is going to be the most important hire that Brent Pry makes, because that is not his area of expertise. He's going to have to lean on that person from day one to be making a lot of decisions that happen on that side of the ball.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be the most important hire. He's going to have somebody that he trusts, but also someone that can do things at a high level, identify and recruit talent to the offensive side of the ball. That's going to be the most important hire that he makes.
I think that entire staff is. I think you've got to have guys that can coach, put in the right system that can work here. But you've also got to, again, I think you're going to see footprint hires. I think you're going to see guys that know, man, what's always been the DMV, the 7-5, the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida. I think as we start seeing that staff go, and I know
– and the occasional handful of stars from Southside Virginia.
There you go. If you got one down there, go get it, because they love to stay at Virginia Tech. Shout out all the Edmonds brothers. Shout out David Wilson. Shout out Orion Martin.
Cam.
Over in Henry County. But I think what, and I don't know if we're going to do an episode next week, guys, because we've done a lot of episodes this year. Brian, click it up real quick just so that you can see how much we've done.
We're at this is 44.
44 episodes. We might need to take a break because we are going to have a banger in about 2 weeks here. But if we start seeing all the coaching hires come down, yes, we will be back. And that probably means we're going to be back sometime next week. So, but I want to see who it is. I think for me, because I've been around you freaking 20 plus years of my life, I want to know who the O-line coach is. I want to know who the O-line coach is. And something we're probably going to do, guys, write this in your calendar, probably January, right, Brian? Once we find out who the OC and the DC is, Brian's going to take the offensive side of the ball, do some tape breakdown. Our buddy, Coach Robbie Compton, down in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, coaching high school ball down there, defensive coordinator, he's going to do some defensive tape breakdown. And what we want to do is kind of say, this is what we're looking at doing next year. For Robbie, it's easy, right? Hell, Robbie's probably – we talked to him the other day about it. Hell, probably is already pulling Penn State tape to get an idea in general of what's going to happen, because it's going to be Brent's system. I can't wait to do that. But culture, identity, his vision, and his passion, this is the job he wants for the next 15 years. And I hope, because of being a fan, he can be as successful as Frank's 15-year run, because the way college football is shaping, if the next 15 years were like those 15 years, Brian, we're going to go to the playoffs a lot, because it's going to be a lot more teams. We're going to have a lot more chances, and I think we're going to be a lot higher. All right, y'all, before we get into even more, we've been talking a full hour. We are going to take a quick pause so I can drink something and Brian can drink something for a quick pause from our digital partners.
As we take a quick break, we'd like to tell you about getting your free website report from our digital partner, Grassroots Digital Marketing Studio. They'll tell you how your website ranks on Google, on-site SEO, and social media. No commitment to buy anything. You can get your free report by visiting grassrootsdigitalstudio.com/free-website-report. Now back to the episode.
All right, guys, we kind of teased this earlier, and we're going to probably hit it real hard right now. Something we'll be doing anytime we record between pretty much now and March, because maybe even the summertime, we're going to look at portal review. Obviously, you know, just with the hire just happening, we have no one in, but we do have we have three guys technically in the portal. We already talked about Darryl Bailey. Backup quarterback Knox Kadum came in. Put his name in the portal earlier this week. I don't think that's a shock to me or you, Brian. But the big one happened today. And We don't know if this is just him being in the portal, being available to talk to other people or what. But unfortunately, Tavian Robinson did put his name in the portal today, Brian.
Yeah, and that's a big one because, I mean, obviously that's going to be, from a overall talent and experience perspective, that was going to be the top receiver coming back for us in 2022.
And punt return.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's big. But, you know, as always, you know, players got to do what's best for them. And I can understand looking at our current quarterback situation and also not knowing what the offensive coaching situation is going to look like, at least for another couple weeks. I understand him making this business decision. And, you know, as always with player choice, I mean, we wish him the best of luck. Yep. This is definitely a once a hokey, always a hokey situation. Anytime he wants to, you know, have a beer, if I see him, I'm buying him a beer because he did some damn good things here as a Hokie. Hopefully there's a scenario where things fall into place and he wants to come back to Blacksburg. But if that's not the case, we wish him well at his next stop and hopefully he goes there and tears it up.
Absolutely. It's just, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen more over the next few weeks. You're also going to have guys with some eligibility not come back. And it's just what it is right now, especially
COVID too. I mean, right now we had a roster full of extra year guys that are not going to exercise that extra year. I mean, Trey Turner's one of them. We had Changa Hodge, said he's declaring for the draft as well. You're probably going to see a couple more guys that do this. You're probably going to see a handful of guys transfer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to be expected. Right now, we're looking to probably clear. I'd say you're at least other than the ones we already know. I'd say you're at least looking at another five to seven that are going to clear out.
Oh yeah. The other piece that I don't know if you remember, and we're going kind of back to the presser, but I got to talk about this. Coach Pry basically said he is going to have a specific unit in his recruiting staff that is portal only. And I think, believe it or not, I think we've already kind of got a jump on that the way we've worked the portal the last few years. But it's the way it's going. And it's going to be crucial. I don't know if he's listening tonight. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. I got a cousin in South Carolina who's a South Carolina fan. The portal is going to be big for schools like Virginia Tech and South Carolina. Because when we need a really good run guard, and there's this kid coming out of Michigan, can't get any PT, he can run block his ass off. Go get him. Well, he has some flaws in pass, but I don't give a shit. He's a really good run blocker. That's our identity.
I mean, look at what we pulled with Johnny Jordan in this past cycle. I mean,
well, Johnny, you know, Khalil. I mean,
yeah. I mean, if that's only really having one part-time person that was focusing on that in Adam Lechtenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think if we actually have two or three folks, a team of people that are just focused on evaluating and recruiting talent from the portal.
Recruiting.
And that's going to be very important year one, because we probably need two quarterbacks, a wide receiver, at least one offensive lineman, and at least one defensive end and one defensive tackle.
True.
That's starting. And that's not knowing if there's going to be any other attrition at any other positions that we're thin at.
And you want to know.
So we're talking about at least leaving five players out the gate that we need to get the portal.
But you want to know the thing, Brian? There are players in collegiate football right now sitting on the bench, not getting an opportunity at certain programs, that it's going to be back-channeled, right?
Yep.
There's going to be people that see it on tape, and they're going to call someone like, listen, you need to talk to this kid about potentially going in the portal. Like, I don't care if you call it dirty. It's going to become part of the game. Like, you need to get him in the portal. Why? Because if he gets in the portal, we can talk to him. We can show him our vision. We do that another way, it's going to screw us up. But he's got to get to the portal. So, again, I really believe – I mean, I think there's a possibility that we there are some good quarterbacks out there that will step away. Because say what you will.
Do you want Adrian Martinez?
No. That was a 3-year start and lost his job this year.
I mean, I just had to clear it out there. It popped out today. I was like, I gotta see if you, yay or nay.
No. Spencer Rattler, yes.
Okay.
I think
I'm fine with that. I mean, I think that's a worth the risk type move there.
Yeah, but you know
where in my mind. Yeah,
yeah. California love.
there's a question whether we kick the tires on Eugene Asante. I know he hasn't lived up to expectations, but he is a
Virginia kid.
Nova kid. He's a player that has flashed at times. Is our staff someone that thinks he can get more out of him in our type of system than they're getting out of him at UNC? I mean, he's had some of the same type of issues that Tisdale had. And in terms of player, he's probably a bigger, faster version of Alan Tisdale.
What is he? He is a redshirt sophomore, technically, right?
He has 2 years left. Counting, including the fact you got the free COVID year.
I would be willing to take a risk on him. Because of who our head coach is now. It's essentially a guy who's, you know, coached a bunch of damn good linebackers. So if it's one of those things where if you see him coming here, it's definitely it's a head coach move, right? And, you know, with Tisdale right now, him and Tisdale are the same. It also depends on what we're going to run on defense, right? Are we going to go into any true 4-3 looks? Because Penn State does have some true 4-3 looks where they have a true weak side linebacker.
Yeah, they still use it on a lot of instances. They kind of, I mean, it's kind of a 4-2 look. It's still, but they use their whip as a more traditional kind of weak side outside, whereas, you know, our whip has pretty much became a nickel that can slide in the box.
Can you just say it? They used their whip like Bud used his whip up until about 7 years ago, like Cody, like Tweedy, where it was, you have to be athletic. It's almost more of like you're playing a third safety on the field, not more of a third. It's more of a safety linebacker versus a safety corner. So the portal's going to be crazy. We've already had some portal conversation. All right, our buddy, we've already talked about him one time tonight. Coach Robert Compton has officially joined in. He must have found a good tree down there in Wilkesboro to get some good signal.
The Wi-Fi is no longer spotty. He found some rabbit ears. He's like standing on his head. He's doing something out there to get the service going.
I'm just thinking.
Thanks for joining, buddy.
Yeah, Robbie. Cheers, buddy. I'm thinking the episode with him, we might have to do like on a Saturday. Robbie, you got to drive up to Richmond. We'll hang out in the man cave here, drink beer, piss our wives off.
Yeah, we'll have an actual round table.
Literally. Exactly. I got the round table right there. Look, you know, I got another bar stool somewhere in the house. All right, let's jump off portal. And Brian, we've all watched – you've watched Game of Thrones, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Huge Game of Thrones from the beginning to the end. The end sucked. Yes, they should have redid it, but I digress. How about Game of Headsets and the craziness, the fucking craziness that's happened and the craziness that broke while I was eating dinner tonight, having some delicious stuffed peppers, by the way. Bronco Mendenhall announces that after the bowl game, he will leave. You texted me and I'm like, you're like, holy shit. What?
Yeah. This is full on Littlefinger. Chaos is not a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Thankfully we came out on the right side of that. UVA meanwhile is holding their dicks a little bit. because I don't think anyone saw this coming. They were not prepared for this. They are in full scramble mode. They could end up working out something that works out for them. But they definitely put themselves behind the eight ball, and Bronco has put them there in a lot of ways. Because this isn't, we're planning on firing you on X date, but we're already having back channel discussions with who the next guy is. This is, oh, holy shit, this guy decided, you know, 5 days after the last game of the regular season that he's done, and we've done zero prep work on how we're going to handle this.
They're so fucked. It's not
and
even,
if, it, yeah. if they could luck into getting the right hire, they might be able to lure someone like Dan Mullen in. They might take a risk and name someone like Anthony Poindexter as a head coach out the gate.
I think that's their only choice. I mean, well, A, because of what happened a few years ago when they kind of screwed him over, but B, it's one of those. It's like, it is one of your best football players, All-American, drafted, played in the league, came back to coach. You screwed him over on the coaching situation. He's at Penn State right now. And the rumors are we're fighting for him to become DC.
Yeah, people and I'm sure Penn State is trying to keep him there to take over for Prize DC. And then you got UVA. I don't think he's going to come to UVA to be DC.
No,
if he's got a job at Penn State,
head coach.
Yeah. Unless they're willing to roll the dice and say, because I mean, all he has right now is some co DC experience, so he hasn't even been a full time coordinator at this point.
Can I tell you why they need to hire him? It's a culture hire.
Yeah, big time culture hire.
It's a fucking culture hire. And they would be idiots not to, because one of the best runs UVA had was when that man was coaching or was playing for you. One of the best runs. And to be honest, we talked about this with Dwight back last winter, Brian. The rivalry had ever been when guys like him, Jeff, you know, from Lynchburg, guys like Dwight, Jake Grove, when all the in-state talent was in, Tech was a top 10 program, Virginia was a top 20 program. And that Saturday meant something every year.
They've been playing against each other, whether it was in high school all-star games, like all that shit used to go on back then. And you used to see some legit rivalries, even from folks that didn't play each other on their regular season schedule. So, I mean, there was a lot of that type of stuff going on, and it carried over into the UVA Virginia Tech rivalry. And Poindexter was kind of one of the last big time players in that Welsh era, along with like Thomas Jones and guys like that. Getting a guy back in like that would be big for them from a culture perspective and from a recruiting perspective, because he's a guy that could definitely recruit the state.
And he
can make a case, you know, I did it here, it can be done here. So that would be big for them. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, just for, I want him on our staff.
Well, listen, if you want to talk about the biggest F you, if they do not offer him and he comes here as the DC, I don't think he'll ever go back there. I mean, for real, like right now.
If they don't at least offer him DC, then
there's no.
They're fucked up.
You have to offer him the head coaching job. You have to. All right, but we'll digress. All right. So the other
Robbie's got a suggestion here. He thinks they should bring back Gro.
Isn't Al like 80 now, though? How old's Al Gro? How old is Al Gro, Robbie? Seriously.
Too old.
He's old.
Too old.
All right, let's talk about this. So the Lincoln Riley stuff we talked about Sunday, which was pretty wild. This is even crazier. Your team is 11-1. Your team is on the verge of the playoff if just one or two things happen. You're out recruiting. Your staff is out recruiting. And all of a sudden, Brian Kelly to LSU.
Yeah, the word is that one of the guys had just left a fucking recruiting visit where they were pitching Notre Dame and Brian Kelly's Notre Dame. And they pull up their phone and they're like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I mean,
and this is classic Brian Kelly, right?
Didn't he just like leave Central Michigan to go to Cincinnati, like out of nowhere, like literally drop the bags and like peace?
He's definitely, right? Yeah. I mean, and I'm obviously there's no like, well, we need X number of days. I get that, but like the situation that Brian Kelly's walking out of, I mean, it's even different than what Lincoln Riley did in Oklahoma. I mean, we thought that was abrupt. This is like next level.
It is. I mean, like,
I guess the only positive is that, you know, Brian Kelly wasn't actively recruiting players to potentially line up to go to his next school. Like, I know that was inadvertent, but it looks shady as hell, doesn't it? It looks shady as hell. We're going to recruit California real heavy this year.
Real heavy. And then, like, he played the long game. Somebody at USC, like, as soon as Clay loses a game, we are going to fire him, so be ready. I don't know how this is going to work. Like, don't get me wrong.
It's working nicely for Notre Dame right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's working really nice. I mean, they're getting sympathy, right? Like,
they're getting sympathy, and they're pretty much maintaining all of their staff.
Well,
like, this is a Brian Kelly is leaving for LSU. And I can you think of a worse fit from a culture perspective than Brian Kelly at LSU?
Apparently there's a video of him out there at the basketball game. He's developed a Southern accent in like 2 days, which is pretty fucking impressive.
Come on. If he starts talking like Coach O, you know what's up.
Oh, my God.
The fix is in.
It doesn't seem like a culture fit, but the guy can coach football.
He can coach football, and I mean, he can talk his way out of a paper bag, apparently. So, I mean, you know, he's a recruiter and a salesman like that, but – you know, the slime ball tactics can only go so far. And I mean,
it's true.
He's not bringing his staff with him. So he's going to have to build either from the base of folks that have coached and recruited in that area, or he's going to have to plumb some new pipelines. Right.
Well, here's the deal though. It's LSU. There's going to be good coaches at schools all across the country that if he goes and says, do you want to coach here? They're going to be like, yeah, because it's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he's definitely getting a situation where it's going to be hard to say no, because A, it's LSU, and B, they're going to pay top dollar for everybody.
It's going to be a first all assistant coaching staff. Everybody's making over $750,000. And he's making like $9.5 million a year over a 10-year deal. They also gave him a 10-year deal. Did you hear that? 10 years. That's 60. Good Lord. But I don't know how that's going to work. It's going to be so interesting to see. But the guy has, you say what you will, the guy's fucking killed it everywhere. I mean,
literally.
Michigan. Oh. Damn, Brian.
You're welcome.
Hey, he'll kill you. Let's go to this, too. Oklahoma, to me, is not in a worse situation as UVA because they're Oklahoma. But, you know, everybody thought this week, well, the younger Stoops brother will come. Well, no. Mark says, I'm good at Kentucky. They like me winning between 7 and 9 games a year. I'm going to go ahead and get a 7-year extension. And basically, I'm coaching here until I'm retired.
He's making good money with only medium expectations, and he's doing a good job of hitting or exceeding those expectations every year right now.
You're damn right they are.
And if he can maintain what he's doing on the recruiting trail and maintain the level of play he's getting from his players, mm-hmm. he's going to ride this into the sunset, and I don't blame him.
I don't blame him either. I mean – why do you want?
He's old enough where he doesn't need a prestige hire in his resume.
No. Doesn't he have national title rings from, you know, some assistant coaching job?
Yeah.
And again, for us, our age group, he's doing what at Kentucky? They're winning games. They're going to bowls every year. Like, they're beating Florida. They're competing with Georgia. No way. So
the last time that program was even decent, Jerry Lorenzen was throwing for him.
The hefty lefty, God rest his soul. There are rumors out now. This is going to flip back to Notre Dame. I don't know. This is us putting this together. This might be one of the longest rundown sheets we've ever had. Literally, like on a non-game week episode. It looks like Notre Dame is going to hire Marcus Freeman. Tommy Rees is going to stay in-house. A lot of the other coaches are staying in-house. Hey, Brian Kelly said it last year. He's a future coach of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe his foot was already out the door too, like Lincoln Riley.
Like, I'm good. Like, I think they're definitely getting a excellent head coach. If you ever go on YouTube and find some of his, you know, interviews, I think that locks it up. And now let's the hefty lefty. Yes, definitely our hero. Robbie Compton, also better known as J.C. Price's doppelganger. True. But I think they're fine. I think Notre Dame's going to be fine. Notre Dame might be better than what they were with under Kelly, yeah. And we're good under Kelly.
I mean, Freeman's a great hire. I mean, he was on our short list when we talked about candidates that we would be good with. When we were looking at, all right, who's the coordinator that you would be most comfortable with that doesn't have any Virginia Tech ties? Freeman. Top of the list. And the fact that he's able to stay at Notre Dame, that helps them both this year to potentially keep their college football playoffs hopes alive if a couple things happen going into this weekend. And it sets them up good going into next year because there's a whole lot of continuity not only in recruiting, but also the systems that they're running on offense and defense.
It's true. Again, I think they're in a better place. He's a 34-year-old. There's only one job he'd leave for. One. And the way Ryan Day is going and the age of Ryan Day, unless Ryan Day decides to go to the NFL, he's not getting to Ohio State anytime in the next 10 years. All right. We've kind of already hit a couple times Lincoln Riley. What the hell is Oklahoma doing? I mean, we're like on day four, and they still don't have a head coach, where I think a lot of us expected after Sunday it'll be Matt Campbell. They'll go hard. Are they waiting for, like, I mean, Brent Venables should be the candidate. He was the OC there under Stoops when they had a shit ton of success. Why aren't you calling him and saying $9 million, 8 years, bring whoever the hell you want to bring?
Yeah. I think that's what they're looking at. Yeah, the question is going to be, do we see any movement after – this weekend. I don't know if they're waiting on somebody else that is playing in a game this week. You know, we had a guy like Dan Lanning on our board. Is that somebody they're looking at? I don't know. Venable seems like the best fit out the gate. Matt Campbell seems like the best upside. Like the high upside pick. I don't know.
Oklahoma just seems like – I think they'll get somebody good because they are Oklahoma. They're a top 15, top 10 program of all time. But the issue now becomes it's not so much this year and next, right, or next year and the year after. It's – dude, y'all are going to the SEC. You're going to be like the seventh program there. I still believe that's why Lincoln left. Like, Lincoln's like, why do I want to be halfway down the peg when I can be a top dog?
Yep. And that's a program that decided that the money was more important than the clout.
But eventually the money can't solve all issues, not when everybody's getting the same amount of money you are.
Yeah, that's the thing. They decided that the money that the program's bringing in was more important than the clout. And I think it's going to cost them long term because at best they're going to be kind of the fourth or fifth team in that conference year to year. They could be lower, but
lower.
I think they'll be lower some years, but I think they'll be higher some years. I think on the average they're going to be like four or five in that conference.
Wait, you're saying four or five? You ready? They're going to be better than Georgia every year.
No.
Bama.
No.
What about A&M?
I mean, I think they're right there with A&M.
LSU?
Depends on what Brian Kelly does.
All right, Florida.
They beat this year's LSU.
They beat this year's LSU. Florida.
It depends on what Napier does.
Well, let's talk about the last 20 years in Oklahoma.
I mean, Oklahoma's played for more national titles than all but two of the teams we're talking about here.
True. I just think the issue is they're going to be seventh or eighth because remember Texas is coming with them. I think they both have screwed themselves, and it's going to be funny in 10 years.
The weirdest part is that Texas didn't need more money. Like
they neither wanted more money. I think it's going to be funny in 10 years. Our boys are going to be like, yeah, I remember when Oklahoma won national championships. They did what? Oh, yeah, you've seen them as a meddling top 25 program your entire life, huh? Yeah, now we understand. All right, Brian, this is the last piece of news before we get into pick'ems. The ACC Network after football season is coming to Comcast. I don't have Comcast. I don't care. I've had the ACC Network since its inception.
I watch it through Fios, so I don't really care either, but –
everybody,
it's big for our market, and it's big for Virginia Tech because that's going to be more media revenue that's coming in directly through the network because you in more markets, so that's going to be more revenue. So that's a good thing. And the big thing is that the footprint that not only we recruit, but that most of the fans are living in is in that Comcast footprint. So unless you have, you're in a metro area and you've got Fios, if you've got,
or you stream
one of the satellites, I mean, there's some options there, but they're streaming, but people that are still on, most small towns, most communities throughout these regions, they're locked into one provider and satellite. More than likely they've got Comcast. And they have not had access here. So this is big for them. And it's big long term in terms of media dollars for Virginia Tech and the ACC as a whole.
Absolutely. It's also big to certain family members, who have been, hey, can I get your Hulu stuff? Can I get your Fios stuff? Why? I need to sign into the ESPN app so I can watch the game. I'm like, okay. So it's good. Again, it's good for all the various reasons. It's just hilarious. It literally took the week after football ends for it to happen.
And it's still in the coming week. So this is probably a start of the new year type deal, if I had to guess.
Exactly. But again, for ACC country, basketball is huge. So maybe it came at the right time to get people to watch the network a ton.
Once the meat of the ACC regular season kicks in at the start of the new year, you'll be able to watch it on Xfinity.
Exactly. Brian, what's the score of a football game? You got it up there tonight?
I don't, man.
Me either. I'm just interested. I don't think I have anybody playing tonight in fantasy, but I don't think I'm playing anybody.
I
think
I am. I was officially eliminated from.
Oh, you got eliminated this week?
Yeah, because Mike won last week, so I mathematically couldn't jump him even if I won this week.
Well,
so he's got me on points and head to head.
Well, if you jumped him by 75 points, you'd be okay.
Yeah, I'm not banking. Yeah, Brian's like that.
Brian, listen, you should be commended for how you managed this fantasy football year. You had a shit ton go wrong at the beginning of the season. To be even considered in the playoffs at the last few weeks is impressive.
Yeah, I was dead last in week four.
Dead last to knocking on playoffs door in week 11 and 12. So kudos to you. All right, Brian, let's flip it over to Saturday Pick'ems. We will be picking all the bowl games as well, but we're going to start here. Brian 66-55-2. I'm 71-47-2. And we're going to pick all the conference championship games. We got 10 of them. Let's start Friday night, Brian. Conference USA Championship. UTSA versus Western Kentucky. UTSA was undefeated until just a couple weeks ago. Western Kentucky's lane 2.5. Western Kentucky blew the doors off of Marshall last weekend and our beloved Charles Huff. But I don't know. I know there's some swirling. Some people have said, let's take a look at Western Kentucky. OC, I think based on what Brent Pry wants to do, nah, he's an air raid type guy. I don't see Brent going doing that. But I also don't see Western Kentucky beating UTSA. I think UTSA wins this game outright. Give me the points, and I'll take UTSA.
Yeah, I'm going the same way with you here. I think Western Kentucky had a really good game against Marshall. I think it was just a bad matchup overall. I think they're a good football team, but I think UTSA is going to pull this one out. Outright win, probably even maybe a touchdown win for them. So I'll go the same route there, bud.
And if you're wondering the records, UTSA is 11-1. Western Kentucky is 8-4. And, you know, Western Kentucky lost to UTSA by 6 earlier this season. That game was at Western Kentucky. So just one of those highlights there. All right. The Pac-12 championship is Friday night, Brian. Oregon versus Utah in Las Vegas. I think that's the smartest thing that the Pac-12 could do is put that game in Vegas every year, regardless. And
big time.
And try to work to get that thing moved to a Saturday night, or at least a Saturday afternoon, because you'd be sitting here like, hey, let's go to Vegas and watch the Pac-12 championship games. Why? Because we're going to Vegas. But how about this one, Brian? Game was just a couple weeks ago. Utah beat Oregon. Utah, the 3-point favorite. What do you say on this one?
I think the revenge factor and neutral site is the difference. Give me Oregon.
I'm with you. The neutral site's the biggest difference there. Rice-Eccles is a tough place to play in the middle of nowhere, Utah. And this is what Oregon does, right? They lose a game 2 weeks before the championship game while they're in the playoffs. They get kicked out of the playoffs. Then they come wreck shop on whoever they play and go to the Rose Bowl.
Yep.
Oregon, give me the 3. Oregon
wins. Tale as old as time.
Oregon wins by 10, 38-28. All right. The MAC championship for one of our
– Maction.
You know who the saddest person is on a weeknight without Maction?
Is it John Earl?
John Earl. Degenerate that he is. Northern Illinois, Kent State. I know very little about the MAC this year. It is one conference I have not kept up with. So while doing my research this week, Kent State has a good offense. I'm one of the best in the country. Northern Illinois, I know, beat Georgia Tech, but after what we saw from Georgia Tech the last basically rest of the year, they're hot trash. I'm going to take Kent State. I think the offense wins this one out. Lay the 3 points. Give me Kent State.
Not so fast, my friend. I'm going to go Northern Illinois here, and this is purely on – I know they play really good football most every year for a MAC team. That's my rationale here. I haven't done any deep dives on these two teams, but I feel like they're going to pull it out, and – I think it's going to be an outright win for them.
All right. It's a revenge game. Northern Illinois beat Kent State by 5 earlier this year. Revenge, Kent State. All right, buddy. Now we're getting into some of the bigger games. And this one is huge. Big 12 championship, noon kick on Saturday. Baylor-Oklahoma State rematch. Earlier this year, Oklahoma State beat Baylor in a pretty good lower scoring contest for Big 12. Oklahoma State laying 5.5 points to Baylor. What do you say on this one, Brian?
I really like the way Oklahoma State's been playing. The only thing that gives me pause here is that about once or twice a year you get those Gundy games where for some reason they don't get it done against good competition. But I think this is going to be the year they kind of shake that off a little bit. So I'm going to take Okie State, lay the points.
All right. Brian takes Oki, Landa points. I'm going to go Oppo of you. I don't think Baylor's going to win this game. This game was a 10-point game the first time down in Stillwater, 24-14. Back in, I think this was September.
It was an early one, I believe.
Early October. Actually, okay. I can remember watching part of it. Went down to a neighbor's house for a little while. I think Oki State wins a game, but I don't think it's as – I think it's a 3-point game. I think being at a neutral site – is going to help out Baylor, but I still think Gundy pulls it out. Something like 28-24.
Okay.
Oklahoma State, Baylor covers, though. You know, and Baylor and Oki State sets themselves up to get into the playoffs as some things happen. All right, let's go out to the Mountain West, Brian. Utah State versus San Diego State. The Mountain West. Sorry, had to put this breaker in here because I'm literally putting them in the order that they come on television.
Is this me? Or are you leading on this one or me?
Oh, that's me leading on it. I'm San Diego State. Best team in the Mountain West. Brady Hoke leading on. Brady Hoke, I think eventually Brady Hoke's going to get a second chance at a P5 job. I think the time he went to Michigan was just not right. But I watched a good amount of the San Diego State-Boise State game. Good offense. Very efficient. Definitely a damn good defense, as they've always had.
Yeah, I'm with you. They always play good defense. I think that's the difference, and I think they're able to probably win by about a touchdown.
All right.
So I'll go San Diego State.
All right, let's go to the Fun Belt. Billy Napier and his University Lafayette Raging Cajuns versus App State. Shout out my buddy at work, Malik. App State laying 3. Does Napier get it done since he's announced it? There's nothing to hide. I'm leaving at the end of this game. Or is it App State getting revenge?
This is the tough one. Does he rally the troops? Do the troops rally around him in his last game at Lafayette? Or is this one where he's got 1 foot out the door and they're not prepared and they lay an egg against a quality opponent? I tend to go with the former. I think the players are going to rally around him, get the job done, send him off with a big win. So I'll take Lafayette. I think they're going to win outright.
All right. Give me App State. I think App State is the best team in the Sun Belt year in, year out. Always a good running game. Always a good defense. And losing to Lafayette this year, I think it's a little revenge factor. But also, I want to say this, Brian. We watched that Thursday night game, a little bit of it, with Lafayette, right? You watched a little. They have been struggling offensively for several weeks now. And I think against a team like App State, we saw App State take Miami to the brink. We've seen App State beat other teams. They took Penn State to the brink a few years ago. I think they spoil his last game and don't get – I think they win the Sun Belt. Give me App State. I'll lay the 3 in like a touchdown game. All right. We go next to probably the game that is going to determine how the playoff looks one way or the other. It's Bama. It's Georgia. Georgia is laying 6.5 points. This one is just tough because only one Nick Saban assistant has ever beat him. Only one. That was this year with Jimbo Fisher with A&M in the basically last second field goal. Watching Bama over the last 2 weeks, I watched a good amount of the Arkansas game, and even though I was watching a Tech game Saturday, it was up on my upper left TV, and I was really keeping an eye on it. Bama's offense showed against a Auburn defense that was aggressive as shit. It struggled. They struggled to score points. Literally, it took them to the end of the game to get to 10. The other piece, we saw the Arkansas game, right? They could not stop the Arkansas run attack. And even though I think Arkansas is a slightly better offensive team. I think Georgia's got more studs. I think this game's about a 14-point game. I think this game is going to be somewhere like Georgia 31, Bama 17. And I'm going to lay the 6.5, and I'm going to take the dogs.
I'm right there with you. Bama will not be able to score more than 17 points. I think probably 14 points. I think this is 24-14 Georgia. So I will take Georgia here.
All right. So in our scenarios, Bama's out. Now, Okie State's won, right, Brian?
Yep.
So they're on the cusp. Let's go down to Houston, Cincinnati. Cincinnati undefeated 12-0, a 10.5-point favorite. They're number four right now behind Alabama. What do you think? They win, they cover, or they win, or they lose?
Good teams win, great teams cover. Cincy is a good team. They will win, they will not cover.
Ron takes Houston in the 10.5 points. I'm going to go completely opposite of you, man. I think Cincy is going to prove a point against a ranked Houston team with only one loss. I think they pound them. I don't think that offense gets off the ground at Houston. 31-10 Cincinnati.
Oh, domination.
Domination.
You're going legal limit here.
I don't know if I'd go legal limit, but, you know, it's not one of them where I see them winning like 40. I can see them winning by 20. All right. So now we've got Bama out, Okie State in, or Okie State winning. Cincy likely holding on to their spot. Before we get to the last spot, let's go to Wake Pitt. What I think is probably – I think that's going to be – this is going to be the most entertaining game of the day, regardless. Regardless. Wake – or excuse me, Pitt is a favorite by 3 points. The over-under is 71. I think they peg that perfect.
Yeah, that's about what I would peg it as well. Yep.
Like right at 35. So what do you say, Brian, here? Well, actually, it's me, right? Because you took Houston. I'm going to take Wake. I think Wake is that team that has shown they can get in some shootouts and win. And there's been a couple times this year where Pitt – just done a couple things just very strange and lost. I think Wake wins. The Fighting Clawsons go to the Peach Bowl.
I've been struggling with this one. You've got the first team All-ACC quarterback on one side, the second team All-ACC quarterback on the other. You got good at times but very uneven and questionable defenses. Yep. Very high risk, high reward. I think the difference is that Pitt's going to do a good job of attacking that long mesh. So I'm going to take Pitt.
All right, Brian's only in the three. I'm taking the three. All right, Brian. The final pick is Iowa versus Michigan. Michigan, an 11-point favorite. Do you know the over-under on this game? Have you looked at that?
I haven't.
43.5. 43.5. Michigan laying 11 points. What do you say on this one?
I like Michigan to win this game. The 11 is just a little too rich for my blood. I think it's somewhere between a 7 and 10-point win for Michigan. So I will take Iowa here.
I'm with you on that. I think Michigan definitely wins the game. I think they win the game somewhere, probably exactly like the over-under's predicting, somewhere like 24-10. So the 11 is just a little bit too much. All right, Brian, isn't this fun? So Bama's out, right?
Bama's out.
They're out. Georgia's won. We keeping Michigan at 2 for CFP?
If Michigan wins, Michigan is staying.
Michigan's 2. What do you do with Cincy? We both predicted they win. You predicted Houston covers. I predicted a big blowout. Are they 3 or are they 4?
If they win like a blowout, I think you move them to three.
What if they just win? Houston has one loss. Houston's 11-1 in their 24.
Yeah. I think they should move to three. I'm trying to think, what is the college football playoff going to do? Well, I think they stay at four.
I don't think they stay at four, because if they stay at four, it's the biggest in the world. It's the biggest FU in the world. Oh, go play Georgia now. Although last year, two similar teams, and they hung with Georgia right to the end. All right, so if our scenario holds true, we both think Oklahoma State wins. No chance Notre Dame's in.
Not if Oklahoma State wins. If Oklahoma State loses, then the college football playoff is going to have to make a big decision.
You know what they're going to do to get how they're going to get it? They're going to put Bama at three. But they lost to Georgia, and Georgia's a really good team.
The whole thing that they did with the, well, Notre Dame doesn't have their head coach and we're going to take that into account, was to create a scenario where Bama can lose and be in. That's the only reason that shit was in there.
And that's bullshit. You've lost two games. You lost to a five-loss team, and you lost to the best team in the country.
We're beyond eye test. If you lose two games, you shouldn't be in.
Yeah. Well, this isn't 12 yet.
Yeah.
12 is where two games can get you in. And three games, depending on who you lose to, might get you in.
Yeah, I mean, eye test is a good differentiator, all things being equal. Eye test should not put you in someone over someone that has a better resume, and B, head-to-head matchups that are comparable, that can say, okay, well, they beat this team, or they beat this team heads up. Like, at some point, the games have to matter.
Yep, games have to matter. I'm still waiting for, if we go to 12, there's a 7-5 SEC team that they try to push in. But the losses are all by like a touchdown.
That's the Oklahoma. That's Oklahoma in 3 years.
Ooh. All right, Brian, has anything broken the last almost 2 hours? I knew this was going to go. I'm probably up under 2 hours.
Hey, so, I think we did good. Just over hour 45. We were pretty smooth, all things considered. We had a couple breaking points just before we went on here that, you know, probably pushed us from just over 130 to just under 150 here. So what can you do? I hope you guys enjoyed it, though.
I hope they really enjoyed it at all. Hope you enjoy when you listen tomorrow. Press like, send us some feedback, guys, of what you want to hear more from us.
Yeah, we got an off season come up. This is when your guys' input really kind of, you know, can set the table for what type of content we put out in the next 5 to 6 months.
Exactly. And our brains are turning. Trust us.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have some fun stuff regardless. But
oh, yeah.
If it's something y'all want, you know, we'll do our best to give it to you.
You're damn right we will. So, Brian, this is a great day in Hokie Notion. Brent Pry officially. Essentially, he has announced he is our head coach. You feel like it's about to be old times back in Blacksburg again, correct?
I feel it.
Let's feel it. All right, well, that will wrap up this episode of the Boundary Corner Podcast. I'm Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler.
Visit our website at boundarycornerbt.com to listen to all of our episodes. While you're there, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Subscribe on YouTube and your favorite podcast source, including Spotify, Amazon, and Apple Podcasts. As always, we'll let our buddy Jason Long play us in, play us out. Catch him on Spotify and Apple Music. We thank you for listening. And as always, let's go,
Hokies!